You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Tonight on the Cooligans, it is the 1 year anniversary of the Cooligans on Fubo Sports Network. Absolutely nuts. And to celebrate, we have an incredible guest, Alejandro Bedoya of the Philadelphia Union.
That's right. We talked to him about a lot. We talked about the Union. We talked about men's national team playing in Europe, youth development via street soccer, and how Chris and I are going to make some bootleg art he's going to buy for a lot of money. Okay. That That's and more today on the Cooligans!
What's up, guys? Landon Donovan here, and I got to kick it with the Cooligans today. Keep following, keep listening, keep watching. See you guys soon.
Yeah, baby!
What?
Vamos! It's our anniversary.
Cumpleaños feliz. Feliz cumpleaños, Fubo Sports Network.
Yeah. Y nosotros también.
Yes, the show's in Spanish now. Get used to it.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, wait a minute. Did I click on Los Cooligans?
Okay, we lured you in for the first year in English. Uh-huh. Okay.
And then we swap.
Okay. We from the language of the conquerors to the other language of the conquerors.
The other conquerors. La Nina, la Pinta, la Santa María.
Let's go. No, man, this is exciting. A lot to celebrate. A big show today. But yes, it is 1 year of the Cooligans on the Fubo Sports Network, on Fubo TV. So congratulations.
Hey, Christian, congratulations and happy anniversary to you.
Oh, thank you. Okay, yeah. Alexis. Yeah. I thought, it's almost.
You were going to say happy anniversary to me, but I guess it's just yours. I guess it's just Christian's anniversary.
I was about to say that. You interrupted me. Yeah. Okay. Yes, you did it. We did it. So happy anniversary. So a big show today. And if this is your first time tuning in, my name is Christian Polanco.
And I'm Alexis Guerreros.
All right. We are the Cooligans. We are your favorite stand-up comedians that are celebrating a 1 year anniversary.
Right.
Because we do the funniest. Soccer television show.
Exactly. And it's not just that. We're also celebrating 1 year of the gulliest television show you've ever seen in your life.
Okay. All right. Okay. The resume is just getting larger and larger. Okay?
Now, Christian and I got to go have an anniversary dinner behind outdoors at an Italian
plexiglass
restaurant
between
where,
us, yeah.
Where we're going to Lady and the Tramp a piece of spaghetti.
Exactly. There's going to be a hole in the plexiglass where I can put my fork and feed you some food.
100%. Usually a hole in a plexiglass is, if you're celebrating the anniversary that way, it went bad. You know?
Okay. It's a clear plexiglass, all right?
Yeah. Things are bad if you're at a wall with a hole in it. What would have been your anniversary?
All right. Okay. We got to tone it down, right? It's the 1 year anniversary. We got to class it up because we have an incredible show today with the captain of the Philadelphia Union, Alejandro Bedoya. Okay.
That's
and this
right.
We should give him a much more proper introduction. So here it is, our conversation with Alejandro Bedoya of the Philadelphia Union.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the episode. We just want to bring it with a word from one of our sponsors, us and you.
That's right. Gully Squad out in full force.
That's right. Out. I mean, you mean in full force. We are staying inside.
We are outdoors spreading this disease.
That's what we do, Gully Squad. We cough in everyone's mouths,
but we're spreading gulliness, all right? None of that COVID nonsense.
Nah, dude. We're spreading COVID 69.
Okay. That's the fun one.
Yeah, dude. You didn't think you'd want it in the beginning, but when you get it, you're like, you know what? It's kind of fun.
So, yes, shout out to Gully Squad. And, for people who help support the show, help us put out more content. We've been doing a lot more stuff, especially on live streaming. They've been a part of it as well. We've been doing stuff on Twitch. It's been really, really fun. Even though, we're stuck at home, we can still do some fun stuff and give, whether it's exclusive content, a dope Slack channel. We're still putting out great work, and that's all because of Gully Squad.
Absolutely, and they support us, and we want to make sure that's we give them back some cool content, and also we want to make sure we find other people that want to come hang out in the Slack channel, because so far it is pretty lit. It's pretty awesome.
Exactly. So if you want to join Gully Squad, all you got to do is go to soccercooligans.com and click on the Join Gully Squad button. It's right there on the menu. It's at the top. It is at the bottom. Very visible, easy to find. And it's a great community. And there's also great perks, obviously. The Gully Squad was invited to our birthday party. And how lit was that? I mean, they got to hang out with... Who are some of the folks they got to hang out with, Alexis?
I mean, it was a wild time that I'm kind of forgetting that because I drank so heavily. But we had Sal Volcano of the Impractical Jokers come through.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay? The Impractical Jokers.
We had Alexi Lalas come through, who some say is a kind of a clown, right?
Yeah, see? he's a less practical joker. He also serenaded us, right, with a guitar. Ellie Menjum of Derby Days and Copa 90 fame.
We had Zach
Valentin, Kyle Martino, Edson Buttle. Yes. I mean,
everybody was there. It was super, super fun. So those are some of the cool perks that come with being in Gully Squad. And we try to give everybody a really fun and unique experience that you may not be able to get everywhere else if you, just a casual soccer fan. So feel free to join. You can subscribe at whatever level and whatever you want to give every month. And there's different, perks for the different levels as well. So make sure, go to soccercooligans.com, click on the Join Gully Squad button, and come aboard.
Toot toot. All right. I mean, I'm so excited for this, Christian. This dude, right? I mean, I know that you are Colombian during World Cup and major tournaments.
That is the rule.
Right. Because Dominican Republic ain't making it. You know what I mean? Okay.
I am big international tournament, Copa America, World Cup, I am loaned from DR to Colombia. That's how
it works. I become Colombian when I get to Queens, just for the discount on the food, fam.
Once you hop on the 7 train, you are officially...
It's over, right? All of a sudden, I don't think Cuban coffee is the best anymore. You know what I mean? But this dude, I mean, you know him, played for the men's national team. He played for Rangers. He played for Helsingborg. He played for another team I can't pronounce. He played for Nantes. He now plays... For your Philadelphia Union, so excited. That's right, the captain. I got me dung. I am so excited to have him on finally. This is the only reason we even had Jim Curtin on the show. You know what I mean? Was just to get us one step closer.
It was a means to an end.
Right? I mean, you do what you got to do, right? No, absolutely. We love Jim Curtin. But ladies and gentlemen, unless you're driving, in fact, pull over if you are and put your hands together for the one, the only, Alejandro Bedoya.
Ale, what's up, brother?
Oh, I like how you pronounce my name, you know?
Dude, we had to go full.
Many people get that right, you know?
We had to go full Latino, you know what I mean?
Latino,
it's an honor.
Latino.
Now, here's something that was surprised me, because I've always known you as a Florida dude, right? But I didn't know you were born in Jersey. I also didn't know you went to Fairleigh Dickinson. So the first question I got to ask you, and there's only one right answer, is it Taylor Ham or is it pork roll?
Pork roll all day.
Come on! That's not right. You're from the north side, man.
Yeah, I got to go with that. It's funny, though, because, my hometown, on some player profiles or whatever, gets listed as Englewood, New Jersey. And my friends from South Florida, they all give me crap all the time. Like, what are you talking about? You're from South Florida. I'm like, well, I'm up in Philly now. I got to represent my northeastern roots.
Damn, Philly gotcha, huh? Once you get the bag, you go pork roll? Okay. All right.
Didn't realize you were so bougie.
I'm crying on the inside, Ale, just so you know.
Dude, look, we talk about you all the time on our show. We are just huge, huge fans. A great player, a men's national team player that's played all over the world, just a highly respected athlete, especially when it comes to American soccer. I think we should really just start with let's talk about just Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Union right now are, the MLS is back tournament didn't go as planned, but I could definitely feel that the passion was clearly there about, this tournament means something. We want to win something for the Philadelphia Union fans. But what does it mean to be the captain of the Philadelphia Union? Because we have a bunch of Philadelphia Union supporters as friends, and it is the passion for soccer in that city is different than any other place that we've gone to.
Philly, it's a sports town. There's no denying that. I mean, it's I don't know, top three sports city in the country. When you look at all the teams and championships the teams have won and how competitive all those sports teams have become. But, you know, it's still up to us, the soccer. We just continue to, our club, our union, to try to gain more respect amongst the kind of the mainstream fans in Philly, right? Because we're, you know, if you know Philly, you know that all the sports teams, they play on the same pretty much parking lot here. Yeah. Phillies, the Sixers, you know, the Flyers and the Eagles, they all got their spots at the same place. And then, you know, the Union, we got to drive an extra 30 minutes out of the city to get to it. So we're kind of dying, you know, working hard to earn that respect amongst the rest of the Philly you know, fan base. But I think we've done that over the course of the time that I've been here. You know, we've been able to become more respectable as a franchise, as a club, our playing style, you know, just becoming way more competitive in all of MLS. And I think we sit now here at the top of the table. In the past few years, we've shown that we can compete with you know, the highest budgeted teams and the best teams. And like you said, MLS is back tournament. There was some pushback against it in the beginning, obviously. You know, we were negotiating the CBA as well. There's no denying that. I'm sure you've heard some of my comments as vocal as ever. But, you know, like with anything, what happens off the field is one thing. But when the whistle blows and I go between those white lines, it's game time. You know, it's business. And you try to compete at the highest level you can and work hard and represent your club, your team, your fans. And I think we did that, and we were able to get to the semis. We fell short, unfortunately, but we showed that whatever the case is, we're able to compete with anyone.
Ale, there's something that happened, and this is just as someone who's a fan. We're both very vocally fans of NYCFC, so we see the Philadelphia Union play all the time, but we're not watching every single match. But there seems to have been a corner that has turned from the sort of middle to end of last season to where you guys are now. There's whether it's Jim Curtin's system is set, whether it's the players have sort of clicked, something has happened where you guys seem so much more unbeatable. Like, it seemed to me in the past when you guys were winning and playing well, you guys were sort of, you know, banging on all cylinders. But now it's like there's a certain level that's been hit. Do you agree? Do you see the same thing? And what do you attribute that to? Because you guys are playing so incredibly well.
Yeah, I think there's always a period of growth, right? I think when I first came here, it was still an ambitious plan put forward with, you know, with the ownership group and, you know, the executives and everything like that. And you know, I saw it as a challenge. I would say that they've built a good core, you know, with a great goalie in Blake. We've now got quality center backs. I think we've got as competitive as a midfield as we have, as you have in the league. And now you have some strikers that have been productive. So when you put all that together, you have the ingredients for success. And the more time we've had together, the more experience, you know, you can't teach experience, right? And I think we've been able to grow together as a club. Same with Jim, the coach, and the staff that he's put together. So yeah, I think things are good here in Philly. You know, I think when I first got here, I told you it was. First of all, my first game was against New England Revolution, and we won 4-0 in Boston.
So you were like, great, like, great move.
I was like, shit, man, this is pretty easy over here. Like, damn, all right, smooth sailing. But obviously, it got a lot tougher, and it is a lot tougher. But I would say even then, you know, we just didn't have, you know, the players that I thought we needed to have at a certain level to get to where we needed to be. You know, obviously, there's been a change of players, but you know, there were times where I would get frustrated, you know, obviously I came with a DP tag, so you try to do too much. So it took me about like 6 months to finally just settle in and be like, all right, I don't have to just go back to doing what you do best, you know, don't try to overcompensate. And there's things, you know, the kids coming from college game or even from the youth setup, tactically, they're not where they are, where they need to be when they turn pro, or, you know, guys that you can't even hit diagonal balls as a center back, you know, you got to be able to do that at the pro level to get to play out of pressure and stuff like that. So there's things we've obviously our depth and the quality of players that we have now are a lot greater than when I first got here and even before, you know, I think Philly Union, I don't think it was a pretty, I would say, mediocre club. I hope nobody takes offense to that, but it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you can't teach experience. So I think now I'm in my fourth or fifth year now. I don't even know. And I think we've already come a long way in doing so. But yeah, a lot of credit to Jim and their staff, you know, for putting certain game plans in place and getting us to play a certain way. And then up to me as a leader to make sure everybody believes in those plans and fights through one another and, you know, plays well together.
Yeah, that's what I love about the Philadelphia Union, that that there is that belief. Not too many teams have this patience, right, to go through, you know, these up and down sort of seasons. And then I love the humility. Even Jim Curtin, even just you guys won 5-1 recently, right? And I think one of the questions, some of the questions from the press are like, can you believe you guys are winning? And Jim was just like, we're good. We're a good team.
He actually said, like, you can say we're a good team. It's like, say it. You
know? Yeah. I like at home. That was a result that we got at home. At home, I mean, we've shown to be really, really strong at home. So it's a fortress for us. So, yeah, I mean, D.C., I don't know if we're D.C. United's kryptonite or whatever it is, but I think we've got the best out of them recently.
Okay, well, I know they're going to clip that and play that in the locker room. So thank you for putting that. If any D.C. player watching this right now wants to be on the show.
I'm pretty confident when we play at home.
Let me talk to you a little bit about sort of, I mean, being a Latin kid from South Florida, having that connection to Jersey, and then next thing you know, you're playing in Europe. What was that? What made you make that decision to go to, what is it? I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Orebro?
I don't even know how to pronounce it properly, but that O with the two dots is like a U, I guess. Like, Orebro, I don't know, something like that. But no, I mean, obviously, as a young player growing up, in a Colombian household, I was always watching soccer on TV. A lot of Argentine, you know, South American soccer, but we'd watch a lot of Italian football, Serie A, you know, growing up. So I think that's where I always wanted to be. That's where the best players were. You know, you're watching Champions League in your college dorm rooms and stuff, making sure you catch a game at 2:45 in the afternoon. Sometimes you skip class or whatever, but that's where you wanted to be. That's where the best games are, you know, the best players are. So at that time, still MLS was still growing, you know, and you'd hear things about, you know, the length of contracts guys would sign and how hard it would be for you to kind of make that jump abroad because there was all these stipulations and stuff. So I just knew that's why I wanted to test myself and challenge myself. So, you know, Charlie Davies had played at Boston College before. I had a chance to go over to Sweden, actually, in my junior year in the summer and visit him. And also, you know, have a training stint with one of that club. And I loved it. I mean, how can you not love Sweden, you know? I went over in the summer, so the weather was unbelievable. You know, it was like daytime, though, all 24 hours. You know, Charlie took me out one night and, you know, you go into the club and it's sunlight. And you walk out at 3-2 in the morning and it's sunlight.
It looks like 2 p.m. Like,
this is amazing.
We get breakfast or lunch or
brunch. Yeah, no idea what was going
Maybe
on.
We should go back in. I don't know. Maybe I'm not even tired.
Yeah. So, no, it was great, man. You know, I thought that I always figured that would be a great stepping stone. You know, I was basing that a lot off of what Charlie was telling me as well, you know. So having him give me some of that feedback and advice was great. And just seeing how they were so passionate about soccer there when I went to watch one of his games. So I was like, this is awesome. So kid from Jersey, you know, playing in South of Florida with a bunch of South Americans and things like that. I never thought I would be in Europe so soon, you know, but I knew if I wanted to really push myself to the next level and if I wanted to get to where I wanted, you know, I could always technically come home if nothing worked out there initially. So I had to take that jump.
Yeah. I saw another interview with you not too long ago. And I think somebody had asked a question about when do you think you could actually become a professional? And I think I remember you said like 17 or something like that, like at that age,
late.
Which seems pretty late, right? Like what was it feels like things must have happened very quickly when you said, I want to be a professional. And then like a couple weeks later, like, oh my God, I'm like, I think
you're going to Sweden, buddy.
Huh? What was it strange to you that it felt so real at that late of an age, given that in soccer in general, it's just like usually know by like 13, 14 years old. And did it seem like everything was happening so fast?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just the kind of the different landscape we have here, or we had at least when I was still growing up, you know. There was no really MLS academy. There were none when I was around. So for me, my parents always harped, you know, education, education, education. And, you know, maybe I wasn't getting the same opportunities as some other kids, you know, when they were on the state teams, regional ODP team. We can talk about that bullshit later on, but that's another conversation. But, yeah, it wasn't until like my freshman year at FDU at Fairleigh Dickinson when I got a call up to the U20s. So that's kind of when it really started clicking, like, yeah, I can do it. You know, even in high school when I still got, you know, state player of the year and stuff, I felt like I still wasn't getting that acknowledgement of being one of the better players. As I had other teammates on my Western team, that were getting more of the accolades and, you know, kind of scholarships to colleges and stuff. So yeah, it was late until I really realized that shit, you know, I'm better than some of these guys and I got a real chance to make it, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, dude. Yeah. It's as long as it might have been, I don't know if it's necessarily a late bloomer thing, but sometimes I think when identifying talent in the U.S. and definitely probably at that time, there probably wasn't anyone to definitively tell you like, yo, you could be in Europe if you really just keep pushing yourself. I don't know.
Because the people who are talent identifiers, maybe still to this day, maybe aren't the best talent identifiers. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I still have emails saved of college coaches telling me that I'm too skinny, I'm too small, I was too short, I'm not fast enough. Like, all these things that, I mean, they shouldn't matter. If you can play, you can play.
Yeah.
I had an official visit done to one school where the coach is like, I don't see you starting as a freshman. Like, how can you tell somebody that? Like, you haven't even seen me step foot and compete against the guys that you currently have. Like, you're not even giving me a chance right away. So it's like, come on. Like, you know? So, you know, I
wish
never
someone would have told me I was too skinny ever, you know? That'd be so nice.
Well, hey, now I got my wifey telling me, you know, about talking shit about my dad bod, so.
And we should talk about a very, when it comes to leadership, man, I mean, not only are you like the captain of the Philadelphia Union, but you are a captain of, I would say, MLS, of professional athletes in this country when it comes to taking a stand and really speaking the truth, right? Speaking truth to power. You had kind of an unreal moment that took over, you know, it was on ESPN, it was on national news, international news. You had scored a goal, and we spoke about this on our show. You scored a goal, you grabbed a microphone that was
in
on the
DC.
Field. Yes.
In DC. Like, you might not even need the mic for them to hear you.
and you really, you know, delivered a very powerful message asking Congress to do something about gun violence. I mean, we had just seen, I don't even remember which mass shooting it was, because there's just too many to remember. But, you know, when we had Jim Curtin on the show, we spoke to him about, like, as the coach, and what did that feel like seeing one of his players kind of, you know, show that kind of leadership and really kind of speak out and use that moment for something powerful. But now we can ask you, what was, it's not even about what led up to that moment, because we know what it was, but what was your life like after that happened? And whether it was dealing with trolls on the internet, whether it was dealing with the positivity, how did you feel after that moment?
Yeah, it was just, it felt pretty good to get that off my chest. You know, just that weekend was surreal. We were in DC and, you know, that was, the El Paso and Dayton shooting happened on that same weekend. Yeah. So, I mean, that was just at the forefront of my head. You turn on TV in the hotel room, that's all every station is talking about. And it's like, here we go again, you know, another mass shooting in this country. So, I still can't wrap my head around what exactly led me to the mic. Because of premonition or whatever it was, but I remember I went over to celebrate in that corner because we had played them previously in the cup game, and that's actually where our fans were that game. But they changed it up.
Wasn't it Elsinho's mom or somebody's mom was there?
I went over there and I didn't see any of our fans, but actually down low, I see Elsinho's mom and sister. I went over and hugged them, you know, and recognized them and all. Yeah. And like, you know, I'm hugging them, I look over and I saw the mic and whatever it was. I went over to the corner and just said what I said, right? So
did you know that those mics basically are put like really high and loud and pick everything up, and you yelled directly in it to where I'm sure some tech in the truck was like slapping the earphones off his head?
Yeah, definitely. But there's also always some guy in the truck too, right? I mean, when you're watching live back at home, you're on a 5-7 second delay, so they could have easily cut that out, right?
I'm glad they didn't.
I had no idea, you know, it got played out until the police officer on the sideline going into the locker room and said, like, hey, by the way, thanks for what you said, and you've gone viral. And that's when I knew, like, oh, here we go. You know, my phone battery was already dead with a whole bunch of messages and everything. Wow. But, yeah, you asked me if I dealt with trolls. You're always going to deal with trolls, right, in social media. I mean, unfortunately, it is what it is. But that was maybe only, like, 1-2% of all the messages I got, you know. I just dealt so much more with the positivity. You talk about impact, and I have victims of mass shootings themselves reach out to me talking about how amazing it was for them to hear somebody like myself to back them up, kind of, or to give them a voice. Suffering from anxiety, PTSD, all these things, you know, it's just amazing. It's incredible that we still continue to see the amount of gun violence that we do in this country. You know, I think it's an issue that I started getting more involved in living overseas, and obviously with my wife is from Norway, and they don't deal with any of this type of gun violence that we do here, you know, the gun culture obviously that we have in our society. So after that incident, you know, obviously I became a member of Everytown organization that tried to bring gun awareness, and so I'm part of their athletes council, sit on their board. So just trying to do things, you know, and here in Philly, in my community, even back home in Weston, because as you all know, Weston is very close to Park, where that shooting happened, that school shooting. And I have a teammate here at the Union who lost one of his best friends in the shooting. So, you know, this all hit really close to home. And, after the Parkland shooting, that's when I started getting more engaged. And obviously that shooting that weekend in D.C. happened. So as a person, as a human, you know, as you guys may be familiar with me, I've always been a vocal guy. You know, I've always stayed up for what I believe in. And this is no different. So I feel like as a father now, who has two kids now going to a school down the road from where I live, and having calls and texts two or three times now about the school being on lockdown, you know, because of a active shooter or a suspect with a gun. I mean, come on, man. Like, you know, like, we can do better than this as a society. Like, we need to continue to work together. You know, obviously in this country, we have the two-party system, but this is a nonpartisan issue, right? This is, and a lot of the things I talk about, I bring up, it shouldn't be so political, you know, that we have to shut up and not talk about it. This is, I'm coming at it from a humane angle, you know? That's where I come from with a lot of these things.
I can't imagine someone being upset at a message of people shouldn't be dying from senseless gun violence like that.
The fact that
someone gets upset about that, it's like, whose side are you on? You know?
Right. Exactly.
It really is inspiring. Even more like, you know, my parents are from Dominican Republic. So immigrant parents, when you're the child of immigrant parents, what tends to happen is that they're more protective and cautious, and like, don't say anything.
Don't get us in trouble.
Don't attract
my attention. Family was like, don't make him send us back to Cuba. Yeah.
No, it's like, as another Latino, it is also inspiring, because it's like, you know, we're as American as anyone else, as the people that desperately want guns. We're as American as they are by saying we don't want ridiculous gun violence all the time, and somebody should stand up for that. So I applaud you for doing that, because it definitely helps us as well.
Well, who does that come from? Who does that? Nah, fuck out of here. I'm going to say what I want.
Honest, because you see that Colombian shirt he's got on? I have Colombian parents, and they're like, ah, yale, otra vez. Come on.
Yeah. I think it's that little bit of Taylor ham you had before you moved to Florida. I'm just going to say.
He would call it a pork roll, but whatever.
Obviously, we're here with Alejandro Bedoya, captain of your Philadelphia Union. And obviously, you know what? Captain of our lives. How's that sound? He says some things that are pretty powerful. I'll accept it. One of the questions that I have for you, look, we could talk about your time at Nantes. We could talk about your time at Rangers. And I am interested in those things. But one of the things that interests me most, and just from this conversation, is what were the opportunities for you like? Because Christian and I talk about this. Christian's from Brooklyn. I'm born and raised in Newark. Like, a lot of the things we hear from soccer players is that if you come from a certain community, you didn't get the same opportunities. And you kind of hinted to that a little bit. Why weren't you, if you're this good, why weren't you discovered until you were 17 or 18? Why didn't you think you had that chance. Maybe were you not able to afford all the touring clubs and all those things that a lot of these kids have to do? Is that where the scouts are? What are some of those things? And do you think you want to maybe help change those when you get out of the game?
Well, look, actually, I have to say I was pretty blessed with everything that I had growing up. You know, I think my parents worked hard where we kind of had all means, you know, to everything. But I was on the team, the Weston FC. That was one of the best teams in the country, actually. You know, we won states a few times, went to regionals and were even at nationals a couple times. So we had a talented group. So I would say out of, you know, the people in my demographic, Latino, you know, minority kids, I had it better than many, than most. But that's not to say my teammates did. We were one of the best teams in the country because of the minority players on our team. The kids, you know, Haitian players, guys from, you know, whose parents migrated to the States and probably didn't even really speak English very well, but they're Spanish speakers. But the reason why they were able to be in our team was because parents like mine and other kids on the team were able to pay for them to come because their families couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had to host a bunch of fundraisers as kids, you know, 13, 14 year old kids. We'd have to do a bunch of fundraisers outside of supermarkets, outside of, you know,
lemonade, fire stations. So lemonade.
Lemonade, all like all this stuff, man, to try to get money for funds to travel to these tournaments, to these showcases where we would be seen. And that's part of the problem in this country, right? You know, there needs to be more investment because a lot of these kids get left out and get left behind because they're not able to afford, you know, the pay to play and be able to get sent to these showcases or tournaments. You know, I think things have changed, obviously. There's more opportunities there. You know, I love what the union here have been doing with the YC Academy and affording opportunities, you know, for guys like Mark McKenzie, the Austin Trustees that we've had and amongst others. But as you know, as a guy growing up in South Florida, I can't tell you how much talent there is down there. As you guys know, even in North Jersey, you know, guys from Ironbound, Newark, and all these areas that maybe don't get the same opportunities as other kids whose family can afford to put them in certain showcases. Or, you know, I think there's like this Adidas ESP tournament growing up. I don't even know if it still exists. That costs a lot of money for you to actually be part of these training camps, training sessions, put you up in dorm rooms, in these hotel rooms. So, yeah, there needs to be a better balance, you know. And I think I'm not sure what I will do after I retire, you know, I'm still thinking about all that. Hopefully not soon, but that is one of the things that I'd like to close that gap, you know, and see if we can. I think there's other people out there, you know. One of the initiatives here that I'm working with Philly is trying to create more, you know, street soccer, like street opportunities where around the city, you know, how can we turn some of these green spaces or abandoned spaces into just a small court, you know, where we can play some soccer, you know,
a little five-a-side,
you know, get out there, get them kids off the streets and provide more opportunities for minorities to play a sport like soccer, the beautiful game.
Yeah, I got an idea. Why don't we get the rich kids to pay for a tournament where none of these people actually go to showcase, and we take all that money and we put it on for the hood kids so they can get. Now, I know what you're thinking. Don't make me a part of this because technically that's stealing. It's not. I'll pretend to be a scout. You know what I mean?
All right.
I probably shouldn't have said this on TV.
That's why we invited you on the show, to get into these investment opportunities.
Okay. You know, Alexis, Bitcoin. Have you heard of it? I don't know what it is, but I think I can get you to agree, Alejandro.
Here's my political answer. No comment.
All right, we'll talk off air.
It is there is something to how you know, someone, I grew up with basketball, baseball, you know, which sports that don't necessarily have this inherent sort of community built into it. Soccer is something where I learned too late in life that I'm like, man, there is something built into the game where, whether it's the passion from all the supporters, whether it's the fact that there is 11 people on each team that are, you know, you don't have to be 9 feet tall, 250 right. pounds to play the sport. So it very much feels like this every man and every woman sport. And that is like, I wish there were more, I would have been playing soccer if there were more
fields and courts in my neighborhood, but that wasn't the case. It was just basketball courts and handball courts, essentially.
Yeah, and I think I wonder if there's something to be said about, you know, growing up. I think for a lot of kids, they see the opportunity to make it out because of the money that's involved with, you know, NFL, NBA, all these things. But now that dynamic has shifted, that's changed. You know, we've seen the minimum salaries and the money in MLS has gone up, and there is opportunity to make a living and change your family's life, in soccer now.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, look, a lot of things can happen, right?
You guys have Sons of Ben, your supporters group, the Cooligans also have, we have a supporters group. It's called the Gully Squad. All right. And they came in with a bunch of questions, and they're, you know what? We have a couple Sons of Ben members in Gully Squad as well, and this guy happens to be one of a Sons of Ben member, Mike Thomas. So I'm sure he's probably tweeted at you, or I'm sure you've seen him at games and stuff. But
he's all in your requested DMs. Yeah, I'm sure he's all in.
Yeah, yeah. He's probably clicked me off as I'm walking off.
great dude. He asked. He said, if you guys want to go off the beaten path a little bit, he said, Alvarado is very into art collecting and just art in general. And he was interested in getting to know more about that. So what is your interest in art, and how did it, any particular pieces that you're proudest of?
Yeah, I think I started getting into it, obviously being in Europe, living in Europe. When I started, I guess, well, I would say becoming more cultured.
Your coffee like with the pinky out. Okay.
For a South Florida guy, that simply means wearing a white scarf. I want everyone watching to know. That means, mira que fancy, okay?
Fancy, yeah. A little sweater wrapped around the shoulders.
Okay? Yeah, yeah. Oh, está en Europa ahora.
Yeah, verdad. No, but yeah, I think just started being able to go to more museums, like just getting out more and going to galleries and museums and taking part in more of the art scene over there. And I bought my first art piece when I was in France, in Nantes, and it just started building up. I started getting more into it. It started with like street art, urban art, you know, guys who maybe you guys are familiar with, like Calls and Futura, Jose Parla. So, you know, I think that comes a lot from being in like the hip hop culture, right? Growing up and listening to hip hop, and you see now, you know, the Kanye West album cover was designed by like George Kondo, who's a big artist.
I'm more into Marie Kondo and just cleaning up my house and stuff like that.
So yeah, I just got into it, and like with anything, you become passionate about something once you dive into it. And I just love it now. Every city we travel to, I make sure to try to visit a museum or galleries with art and just see different collections and stuff. What? So now I've gone into it a lot more now. So I've been able to build up a decent collection at home and some pieces in storage.
Okay.
Yeah, Christian are going to have to make you a painting. You know what I mean? Talk about expensive art, you know? Maybe a stick figure.
A lot of it is seen as an investment and stuff too.
I'm going to tell Alexis, paint me like one of your French girls. Yeah. That's the thing I love about it, at least in Europe, it's like Europe is old, right? There's so much collected history.
Yeah, man.
You know, as opposed to, there isn't that necessarily. I mean, obviously, North America and the United States is old, but like it was obviously conquered and pillaged, and there's so much history that is gone and missing. But then the things that are like American pieces are just like dumb Confederate statues from like 40 years ago. You know what I mean?
Like, this ain't art.
This ain't art, bro.
This is made by a machine, dude.
No, but that's like the thing, you know, art is like, I've always been fascinated with architecture, you know, like growing up, and we moved around a lot. So I always loved like houses and seeing how different houses can be designed. So, and I can think that just led to art. It's a form of art, right? And for me, art is like, it's very subjective, obviously, but kind of like soccer. Like, that's why so many people have different favorite players, because they like this guy's style of play better than the other guy's style of play. And they'll agree about who played good and bad in the game and this like that, you know. And with art, you know, there's abstract, there's contemporary expression. Like, there's all different types of art that you might not like, and somebody else does. But I think
like
it's cool.
Cause I don't understand. I'm like, you paid how much for a gray and white Mickey Mouse with X's over the eyes? It's a toy. Go, yeah. What are you doing? But everyone's like, yo, this and that. I would have thrown that out. I would not have known. So it's all, you know, it's
like, I've never made enough money to feel comfortable at an art gallery, right? Like I've gone to like art shows and stuff like that. But then I look at the price tag on some things and I'm like, yo, am I allowed to be in here? I'm like a little concerned.
That's why I take a step
that
back.
Works that much. Yeah, no, it is crazy. It's a crazy world.
I go for the free wine. You know, that's what I'm into. This question comes from Val Paschal, who's a big DC United fan. She wants to say that you've been very strong about making social statements, whether it's in the game or after the game. What do you feel about the league sort of ramping up their messaging this year? And are you a bit surprised?
Yeah, obviously referring to the Black Lives Matter, especially during the protest and during the MLS's back tournament was incredible and very, very powerful.
Yeah, I think fair play to them, you know, for being involved and as involved as they have been. I think even the Black Players Coalition, they'll tell you guys, the players involved with that, that the league has stepped it up, you know, in terms of coming to the table on certain issues and just talking about it, have a conversation and letting us players, you know, kind of dictate some of the issues that we're, you know, passionate about. Like I said in the beginning before, a lot of this stuff, it shouldn't be political, you know. These are things we're asking as human beings. Like, how can you be against equality? How can you be against racism? How can you be against, like, treating each other better? You know, it's just, it's blasphemous, some of the things that people will say against it. So I don't think the league has been left with, like, no choice, so to speak. But I think they recognize that. In the future, you know, this is going to be looked down upon. Like, what side of history were you on? Were you there supporting people of color or your own players, athletes that have felt oppressed or feel a certain way? And it's about kind of bringing us all together. Or have you been, you know, against it or shutting them down or, you know, shutting them up, so to speak? So, you know, I give credit where credit is due. I think the league has done a good job at coming to the table and allow it and kind of collaborating with us as athletes on various social.
I mean, I think the main point that we can all take from it is that protesting works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look, even Roger Goodell from the NFL was like, I was wrong, right? So, you know, he didn't feel that way at first and it's changing people's minds. So little
stick
by
up
little.
For what you believe in.
We have another question from a Gully Squad member, Ebony Christmas. She had asked a couple questions. So maybe we can separate these a little bit, but hopefully it's not too much. She says, how have you seen your game improve in the past season? Is there anything that stood out that you were like, I'm gonna, you know, I think as athletes we're always I'm including
we're
me.
We're
no,
wow
please.
You know Colombian... Alejandro as
I put,
a we
I put the Colombian shirt on. I play in the Sunday league, Ale. Just I don't want to threaten you or intimidate you in any way.
You can be a baller in a Sunday league, you know.
Okay. He is not, my friend. That was a strong we. That was a almost French he was thinking.
As athletes, I'm sure you're always looking to work on something every year. And I had remember somebody had mentioned, I think this was last year, you were responding to someone who was critical about your gameplay, or I think something about speed or something like that. And you were like, that isn't the only thing that matters in soccer.
Yeah, so I guess to answer her initial question, I think I brought it up earlier, where when I first came here, you know, you come with this BP tag, you know, and there's this, I guess, kind of set of expectations for you, you know, that you feel like you have to match based on other DP signings and stuff like that. But I've never been a goal scorer. That's not what they signed me here for. They signed me to, you know, to play my game, which is to protect the defense, but also to be able to start the attacks and control kind of the tempo of the game and create things for our club. So for me, the way I think my game has progressed and I've improved is not like thinking I have to be on the ball all the time or always be making that final pass. If you look at the way our team attacks, I would say that one of our strengths is that we typically attack on the right-hand side. And that's because I happen to be more on the right-hand side. I'm able to find those pockets of space. I'm able to even off the ball movement when I'm not even getting the ball. You know, I'm able to move the other team's, you know, six or number eight or even their center backs out of positions or outside backs out of positions that allow opportunities and space for the other players on my team, you know? So these are all things that, you know, aren't, I guess for the casual fan, maybe don't catch your eye, you know, because yeah. I'm not a fancy guy. I'm not the step over guy that you can play with FIFA and ball out on. But
that's a senior's job.
Yeah, that's a senior's job. Just give him the ball yeah, and let him do his thing. But like in France, you know, they call me Le Facilitator, the facilitator, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
In this game, soccer, it's a simple game, right? But it's hard to play simple.
Uh-huh.
If you yeah. get what I'm trying to say. So I think that's where my game has developed, where, you know, I let the, with the center backs that we have now, and every guy on our team can play with the ball, you know, let them be the guys who are shifting the other team with their ball movement. And my job is off the ball is to find those pockets of space where I can be open. And there you go, bypass their midfield. I'm getting the ball behind their midfielders and attacking them and being able to yeah. play the ball forward to our attackers to let them do the work.
Yeah, you got to facilitate, give them the ball to Brendan Arrington and go, yo, shake them, shake those fools up.
Yeah, yeah, yo, break some ankles, my kid.
There you go, yeah, there you go. I don't have that hip movement, you know. Yeah.
She also asked, Ebony also asked, she said, how did the team come up with the idea to wear the different names for their first MLS is back game? Because we obviously the names for people who have been killed by police violence. What was that process like? Because that first game was definitely a very emotional kind of experience, I think, for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's something that I'm really proud of from the club and from us as a team. We kept that really quiet because obviously that wasn't something that I don't think the league initially wanted. But you have to, yeah, because you have to submit kind of like the uniforms the day before, all this stuff. But yeah. We kept it hush hush. But I'm going to give a lot of credit to our black players on the team, Mark McKenzie, Warren Craval, and Ray Gaddis. Those three guys have been great leaders as well. And, you know, Warren Craval is the one that designed the Black Lives Matter shirts that we're wearing. And I think amongst themselves, they discussed the idea of, you know, what kind of message would it send out if we wore the names of the victims on the back of our jersey. So we got together, us four, along with our kit man, and Jim came in the equation later as we talked about this idea. And Jim was obviously, yeah, I'm supporting you guys. I'll do whatever you do. You know, we'll keep it hush-hush. We're not telling anybody. So it was only pretty much us five that knew about it. And we just unrolled it the night before the game. We had I called a team meeting together, and I let the guys know, guys, this is what we're going to do. And I think it's very important that we don't support just our black teammates, but that we're supporting the victims, and we take a stand against, you know, police brutality, against racism, against these issues, that we use our platform. This is what we said we would do when we come down to Orlando, not just play, but also use our platform to raise awareness for the social issues that impacts our lives. And everybody was behind it. And we gave every player kind of a little notes about each victim and for them to look at it, study it a little bit that night, read about it. Because obviously some of these names, I'm sure people didn't hear about them or they weren't front news. Mm-hmm. And that's what our team, that's what our players did. They read up on it, and just to make sure, you know, if they were asked any questions the next day, and they knew what they were talking about and who they were representing, you know.
Wow.
So it was awesome. You know, I think a lot of us had the club at least had heard back from some of the families that they would love to have that jersey, you know, sent out to them. So I know from my, you know, Walter Scott family, I sent a message out, wrote them a little letter and signed the jersey for them and let that family have it. You know, everybody grieves differently, but I think it was a nice first initiative for us. It was a great undertaking, I think, from us from our black players.
Just from watching it on TV, it was extremely powerful. So thank you so much for everything you guys did.
Thank you so much to Ale Bedoya of the Philadelphia Union for joining us. Absolutely honored. Like we said earlier, we are huge, huge fans of you. So thank you so much for joining us, man. Is there anything you want to let people know about before we sign off?
No, I just think it's important this year as an election year that everybody, you know, as a citizen, we all get out to vote November 3rd. Election, so make sure you take care of that. And follow me on Twitter, Ale Bedoya 17, on Instagram, Ale Bedoya, for some art, some soccer,
okay,
some funny family stuff, whatever.
All right. Yeah. Please vote because our lives are a living nightmare the last 4 years. So everybody, make sure you follow at Soccer Cooligans on all social media, at Fubo Sports on all social media platforms as well. And make sure to subscribe to the Fubo Sports YouTube channel for full episodes of the program. So let us end the show the way we normally do. As is tradition. Mm-hmm. So again, thank you, Alvedoya, for doing this. So for Alejandro Bedoya, my name is Christian Polanco.
And I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And together, what are we?
The Cooligans!